kid at LES_KPFT at Pacifica.org or call her at 281-668-8854. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
XXIV is Roman for 24, and you know what they say about that. And what they say is that they will be there at the Last Concert Cafe on Saturday, July 31st, for the 24th Annual Watermelon Dance and Summer Social. This KPFT benefit features the Spare Parts Band, Leslie Newman, Jimmy Dean, Los Vertigos, Richard Cagle, Larry from Austin, Plump, The Rafters, The Hightailers, and Pot Roast, all starting at 4 o'clock. Located at 1403 Nan Street, just off the Hardy McKee exit on I-10, the Last Concert Cafe is the ideal place for Houston's premier summertime music festival. The door fee is $15 for one, $25 for two. So bring a friend and come on out and dance a while you support your community radio station, 90.1 KPFT, Houston. XXIV, 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 XXIV.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And on the show tonight, the Democratic Party recently held its statewide convention where it adopted a GLBT-inclusive platform. This comes in stark contrast to the GOP platform, which condemns the GLBT community. State Representative Garnett Coleman will discuss the details of the platform passed by the Democratic Party. That's followed by NewsWrap, which tonight reports a U.S. federal lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of Don't Ask, Don't Tell has begun in a California courtroom. Charges are dropped against two gay veterans for twice chaining themselves to a White House fence to protest the policy. And in Washington, D.C., the top court has ruled against homophobes who wanted to place a Proposition 8-like initiative on the local ballot to overturn the city's marriage equality law. At 9:30, openly gay singers Jason and DeMarco will be here to discuss SAFE, pronounced SAFE. It's Safe Affirming Family Environment. This is an organization that is dedicated to establishing safe houses, which provide young adults long-term transitional housing. SAFE is also dedicated to helping to connect foster care agencies with gay-friendly foster parents who are willing to take gay, lesbian, bi, transgender, and questioning foster children. Tomorrow and Wednesday, the second annual Texas Transgender Non-Discrimination Summit will be held at Rice University. The summit will discuss what Texas colleges and universities need to do to add transgender rights to their institutional policies. Josephine Titsworth will be here to tell us more about that. The Houston GLBT Community Center has created what's being called the Volunteer League to recruit people to do the center's work in the community. Tim Brookover will join us to discuss that and other new programs recently started at the center. And the feature segment from This Way Out tonight has an interview with actor and film director Del Shores about Sordid Lives, the series, which was a hit on Logo, but canceled after one season. And that is our show, and a very busy one at that.
Yes, we do. We always have a busy show.
That's right, we do.
But I think tonight will be a very interesting, entertaining, and informative show.
Yes, it will be.
Well, there's a lot going on. There's with the Transgender Non-Discrimination Conference coming up. I attended last year. And there it was, it was well attended, but it was small.
And I've understood that they've raised the bar this year. They have it at Rice, and they have a lot more attendance from across the state.
The last I heard, there were like 70 to 80 people already signed up, which, last year was about a dozen.
So we're kind of, Houston's leading the way, and I know Josephine has been very instrumental in doing that. So,
well, we've made some headway. There's been some stuff go on that have changed. Obviously, the city of Houston is leading the way in the state of Texas. Some cities are ahead of us, but we're doing our part.
Absolutely. And First, we have Garnett Coleman, and he's on his way, so he should be here shortly. And then right after that, we have Jason and DeMarco, who are our local celebrities who I'm excited to have on the radio. And maybe we'll get them to sing a little bit. I haven't asked them yet, but we'll probably.
You're going to ask them that?
I'll ask them that.
Well, make sure they bring instruments beforehand.
I like the acapella.
And as well as, along with that, we've got some things that they always like to remember. And we've got the community center coming up as a part of the show this evening. But there's also to remember, to remind you of some other things that's going on at the community center. They have their coming out group that meets at 7 on Mondays, mm-hmm. which was earlier. So you can remember it for next Monday. You've got Unhinged Productions meets at the center at 7 p.m. on Mondays also. The let's see. We also have on Thursdays the Center HIV Support Group starts at 6 p.m. So these are some other things that our local GLBT Community Center is doing and in support of our community.
You know what I like is they started up the Queer Bingo again. And
so, I love it.
I think it's the first Saturday of every month, and they've had two so far, and it's a lot of fun. Everybody comes out, and, you know, one's a meal on Westheimer.
Yeah, on the second floor.
Yeah, and it's a great time. You know, it's kind of a communal environment where you get to have fun and raise money for the community center.
Oh, absolutely.
And I won last time, so that that makes it a lot more fun.
I won the time before, so that made it even better for me. I liked it that way.
So you should come out. It's the first Saturday of every month, so coming up in August, they will have another Queer Bingo.
Yes, and we'll announce it again when it comes up here on the show. It'll be August
1st Saturday in August.
Isn't that August 1st?
I believe that is.
I believe it is, since we're... Well, no, it isn't.
Well, let's look at our calendar, Jennifer.
Okay, look at the calendar.
August 7th.
August 7th.
Yes.
Okay, well...
So you're off by a week.
That's okay. I was trying to pull from memory. You have a calendar in front of you. I don't.
So...
Well, we have in our studio right now a representative, state representative, Garnett Coleman, a friend of our community, a friend of, I think, a friend of the best of the best. He's our friend and my personal friend, and good to have you here.
Very good to be here.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry I'm a few minutes late, but I was walking a lady to her car.
That's always good.
Well, that's always good. Right. That was always my excuse.
Right. Well, she just, you know, I don't blame her. You know, it's dark outside.
Well, you're absolutely right. And to be safe.
Right, and to be safe.
Like, yeah. Well, we have invited Garnett on because you did a comparison that I saw on the internet between what was in the Democratic platform and what was in the Republican platform. And I noticed that there was a whole lot in the Democrat that wasn't in the Republican.
That's correct.
And I want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take it up from that position. I did look up some for anyone in the GLBT community. If you really want your blood pressure to go up, just read the Republican platform, which is what I did. Two years ago, I did that, and I read excerpts from the Republican platform every week as to just a public service announcement. But let's talk about some of the things you brought up in your comparison.
Well, I mean, first of all, we believe in rights for all people, and they believe in actually taking rights away from people. And that's something that distinguishes the parties and distinguishes their point of view in terms of advancing our society. And their point of view is less is more. And our point of view is that the more we open up our society and have the Constitution mean the same thing for everyone, that's when America reaches its promise.
And I agree. There was I'm not beating up, but I'm going to read directly from the Republican platform. And it's something that just sort of scared me. It says, the first sentence, it says...
And she's not making this up, y'all.
In the preamble. Oh, you can go online and get this. It says, the embodiment of the conservative dream in America is Texas. That's scary.
It is scary when the conservative is defined as narrowing one's mind in the, towards the pursuit of whether it be equality, needs in government, public education, those types of things, that government itself has no value, in a party that actually runs to decrease the value of government. And that is a fundamental difference between the two parties. And so I think that, that's one reason why we do better as a party, because we really are looking out for them as well.
Well, in addressing some of the questions that are the differences that came up concerning the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, whereas in the rights and freedoms as spelled out in the Democratic platform, the one sentence is a repeal of discriminatory laws and policies against members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. I mean, that's just straightforward.
It's very straightforward. There's no ifing and button and all of that and wiggling. It's, we do not want rights eroded for anyone, including and importantly saying the GLBT community, and saying it straight and clear.
Well, that's also in limiting people's rights.
Well, that's correct.
Where what has been going on for quite some time during the last administration.
No doubt about it. You know, there's when a community is under attack, a group of people is under attack because of who they are, because what they embody, we believe that's wrong. We believe that it's wrong for the rights and freedoms that are in our Constitution and in the Bill of Rights, as well as in our Texas Constitution and Texas Bill of Rights, that should be afforded to everyone.
Well, one of the things also, and I'm not going to read it exactly, was that the strict interpretation of the, you know, let's see, it was the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, and the Texas Constitution. And I doubt, I'm a student of Texas, there are a lot of amendments in there that you don't want strict adherence to, because, I mean, they go back to, you know, 1836 and 1840.
That's true.
That don't fit.
But the when we take our oath of office, we say to protect the laws of the United States of America and the laws of the state of Texas. And you know, that's why there are continued discussions about what does our Constitution mean, and whether the rights, again, within that Constitution are actually being, and which override the Texas Constitution, are being offered and available to be practiced by every American. And I think that that's, you know, the basis of, you know, some people say we're Democrats are weak because they really, you know, want to help everybody, or they want everybody included. You're right. If that's weakness, then we're weak. I think that's strength. And I think that we are people who like to push things forward that's and be on the right side of history, the right side of our government and what it means, and uphold those principles that the founding fathers and mothers, who didn't get their names on the Declaration, or write names in the writing of the Constitution, we want to fulfill what their wishes were.
Going back to your comparison, what are some of the other areas that you had just that stands out in your mind, that comes to your mind?
Well, public education is a real difference between the two parties, and the reality is that we want to have an education system, both higher and public, secondary education, that provides for a better future. And that means it works for our people, whereas the Republicans want to unwind the public education system.
Oh, yes. They want to, let's see, where is that? Having an educated population with parents having the freedom of choice for the education of their children. Okay. That's the
freedom of choice is unwind. That means vouchers. That means diverting dollars
means undoing the public education system.
Exactly right, because the public education system works on economies of scale and the fact that we have to educate all people. When you start pulling money out from under it, then it begins to collapse. And the public education system is what changed this country and changed the state. When people could get a free public school education.
It could be like it was in the very beginning. There wasn't public school.
No.
Only a few people were educated.
Well, most people don't know that's part of Reconstruction. And that under Reconstruction, public school was a part of the Reconstruction Act after the end of slavery. And so in most southern states in particular, it was African-American members or black members of the legislature at that time that did the bills, including in Texas, creating public education in Texas because it was required by the Reconstruction Act.
And
most people don't know that, by the way.
I didn't either.
Yes.
I would have considered myself a good historian. I missed that one.
Well, that's one of the reasons why. The pieces that were put in the Reconstruction Act were pieces that were the norm in the Northeast. So Reconstruction, of course, was part of what happened in the South. So if you go into Fourth Ward or Freedmanstown, you'll see Gregory School. Mm-hmm. Well, Gregory School is named after the general who was in charge of Reconstruction in Texas. General Gregory.
And that's why we have public education.
And that's why we have public education, because it was required under the Reconstruction Act.
So if there hadn't been Reconstruction, then what would have happened would have been there would be no public education, possibly?
No free public education, as required under the Act. So once you had to do it, the state passed it and created a system.
But that was something that was going on in the North and many other portions of the
country. Already. That's right. And so, you know, it has been the great equalizer, because what has happened in Texas is people who had no opportunity based on whatever economic class or social class they were born into now had the opportunity to go and get a free education. And because Texas had it very, very inexpensive higher education, it moved people from place where they were in unskilled labor or semi-skilled labor into a point where education was attainable because it was free or very inexpensive. And it was under these folks in Austin that raised college tuition out of reach
for the majority of people.
And so that's one of the big changes. And again, it's, you know, it's sort of like, I got mine, now I'm going to pull up the ladder, you figure yours out.
Right.
And, you know, and I always say that. So that's one of the, like I said, the differences in how folks are approached. There's differences on a woman's right to take care of her body and make decisions on what she wants to do in terms of childbearing, and it's totally opposite. We believe in choice and the ability for a woman to make a decision about her body and her health care, and the Republicans don't believe in that.
Yeah, from the Republican Party platform, in their principles, item number 4, the sanctity of human life created in the image of God, which should be protected from fertilization to natural death. That's as they put it. I mean, I'm just reading this stuff.
As they put it, again, that's not the law. And the reality is, you know, people don't want to go backwards in not having the access to free and safe abortion. But the reality is that what the Democratic Party is interested in is making sure that there's not unwanted pregnancy that moves people to have abortions, and that we have a system that provides birth control or teaches everyone how to avoid unwanted pregnancy.
Or as the Republican platform states, is they are opposed to any sex education other than abstinence until heterosexual marriage. Notice how they put heterosexual marriage to be clear, very clear about it.
Yeah, but wouldn't they want abstinence to any kind of marriage? Before
I would
any
think
kind of marriage?
That's what I'd think.
As a matter of fact, the original language that was used by this group was that abstinence is the best form, is should be practiced before marriage, and that was it. That was the language. And actually, in talking about that, really, it's been a problem because the state of Texas law says abstinence based, not abstinence only. And the reason why we still have a problem with teenage pregnancy is based on the realities of the world and the fact that in some communities nothing is being done. It's been since Ann Richards was governor the last time anybody looked at teen pregnancy in any real way. And that has to change because this is harming young women and young men, and particularly whether it be HPV, human papillomavirus, chlamydia, any other common hep B if they don't get a vaccine, any other common sexually transmitted disease can cause some real problems. But not being able to take care of a child is a big deal.
And
I was surprised by the hate that was in the Republican Party platform and the part where they want to recriminalize. They want to overturn Lawrence v. Texas, and they want to ban, where's the line?
Where's it? You're talking about, that was where, it is,
yes.
Right here.
Mm-hmm.
They basically want to overturn the law and make homosexuality illegal again in Texas.
Well, good luck, because the Supreme Court has said otherwise, and I think that means that requires a constitutional amendment to change the Constitution of the United States of America. The reality is that law was antiquated years ago, and fortunately we had two very courageous individuals from this city.
That's right.
Who used their own lives to make a change for everyone's life based on the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution, that any right that goes to an individual man or individual woman in dealing with them, their intimate activity goes to a man and a man and a woman and a woman. Yeah, they may want to undo it, but they would have to undo the Constitution, because the Constitution is correct. You can't have a bias by gender.
Well, didn't we have a constitutional amendment here, which I didn't agree with, but it sort of bans gay marriage or
right,
same-sex marriage?
It's banned. I mean, the Constitution has in it the actual ban on same sex or same gender marriage, and some people believe civil unions as well, up to a certain point. And that was passed, and so I don't know why you got to pass it four times. I don't know. But I filed a bill to undo it.
I thought it was interesting that what they're asking for is to make gay marriage a felony offense.
So not only is it illegal, but if you perform it, you get thrown in jail, minister.
Well,
I understand.
You know what's interesting?
Please.
And this is these folks, like you said, spewing hate. Well, then that's when you know it's politics.
Mm.
Because once you've gotten what you wanted, now, you know, in other words, DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, all that stuff, they got what they wanted. They're beating a dead horse. It's dead until the court overturns it. But they believe, that shows you, they believe the Supreme Court will overturn the DOMA laws. And that marriage will be allowed by the Constitution of the United States as decided by the Supreme Court.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too. I'm an ordained minister, and I've married a number of same-gender couples. I mean, under Texas law, it's not, you know, legal in that respect under civil law, but it is legal under religious canons.
That's correct.
And
as you know already. However,
I can be, it's a felony if I do this.
Under their rules,
yeah.
Well, again,
is this Texas that this platform is in? It's scary that we live in this state where this is the statewide platform.
Yeah, 2010 state Republican Party platform.
Well, I mean, the Southern strategy, as laid out by Lee Atwater, who worked for George Bush, did the Willie Horton ads. As a matter of fact, Karl Rove worked for Lee Atwater,
mm-hmm.
and Lee Atwater trained Karl Rove. The Southern strategy is find someone to hate and use that to change elections. If we were making a rope, the four strands or braids that make up the braid of the Southern strategy are hating the GLBT community, hating the Mexican community. Let's be very clear.
Right.
Talking about Mexicans.
Not just immigrants.
Immigrants. Hating the black community or black people. And hating progressives now, but under the term socialist. Putting all of those together to say, we don't want these people. And using that to have people go out and vote against the desires or change in this country. And, you know, using ethnicity or using sexual orientation or using sexual identity or any gender identity, any of those things, or using my beliefs as a progressive to say that I'm somehow bad. I just don't think that's the right way to go. And that's what their platform does. It demonizes people who are maybe, I would say, I'd like to say better Americans, but let's just say at least as good or better Americans than the folks who are spewing that. That it doesn't go along with what we believe as a country. That's not how we do things.
It's divisive. So disingenuous.
It's
very divisive, and it seems a little desperate to me that they're kind of pulling the last string to kind of get votes. And
well, that's why it's I chaired the state Democratic Party platform committee the last five conventions.
Yes.
And what we desired to do was to make sure that our values were represented in our platform in terms of what we wanted for all Texans. And I think, and what's really important, the Democratic Party is very diverse. I mean, we go from the most liberal, progressive, I mean, all the way over there that haven't figured out whether they're libertarians or socialists, but they're one or the other.
Right.
I mean, which is fine. All the way to some of the most conservative people we would ever find. And the fact that we can write a platform that literally represents the interest of the groups of people in our party and not have a problem writing that platform. That ought to say a lot to people, that these are universal beliefs about how humanity treats each other, and that, you know, people believe in a higher power. You know, Democrats do believe in God or Allah or Buddha, whomever else it is, but we believe in a higher power. So, you know, I told a reporter, I said, you know, the one thing that's really funny is people don't understand how practical Democrats actually are, how we're just like anybody else, regardless of, you know, how progressive, we're very practical people. Texans are practical. You know, we don't want to waste money, but we don't treat our neighbors badly. And that's what's represented in the values and the platform, that we don't treat our neighbors poorly.
Absolutely. You know, that just says it all right there. One of the things that really struck home to me that sort of irritated me the most was one of the statements defining marriage again. It's like they got to keep saying it. How many times they got to say
this? The horse, and there's the stick, and it's keep hitting.
Yeah.
The horse.
Well, it's because they feel for their constituencies good politics.
It's also a wedge. They believe it's a wedge in our coalition.
Yes, and it says defining marriage as God-ordained, legal and moral commitment only between a natural man and a natural woman.
Okay, now they've
being
added
a
natural.
Trans, yes, being a trans person, I know who they're addressing that to.
Well, again...
Yeah, but Jennifer, you're a natural woman.
Again, it's again, using people's lack of understanding to create hate because they don't understand, to create division in both our coalition and in America, and using you to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean you as a person, just like right now under the Tea Party movement, that you know, it's you. I mean, you know, excuse me, but I'm a nigga again.
Yeah.
Because it's just the truth, quote unquote, because states' rights, we all know what that means.
Oh,
what
yeah.
that means is we want it to go back to Jim Crow days when states' rights was the reason why discrimination could be written into the law. And that's exactly the same thing that is occurring here, writing into the law discrimination against you and others, other people that are in the GLBT community. That's just wrong. Just like writing discrimination in the law in Arizona against immigrants and everybody else, if they consider you to be reasonably suspicious, to stop you because you might be
illegal.
So I don't know. You know, that could be anybody, quite frankly. I still haven't figured out how.
It's very elusive.
Well, and one of my concerns is, and a concern not as a Democrat or Republican, but a concern as a citizen of the United States, not only discriminating against GLBT people, but those less fortunate.
Oh, yeah.
The quote unquote social welfare system in America is under attack.
Well, of course, and the reason why we have a social welfare system, which is the old words for it, is because we know that we are our brother's keepers. And the reality is that we're humane, and we don't, as a country and as people, we don't believe that folks should be left just hanging out, left on the street. That's what we don't believe. When people start saying that that's what we should be doing, that's the problem, particularly when they start saying that's what we should do even to children, even to people who are disabled, who were under Reagan the truly needy.
Right.
The truly needy don't even count anymore. So you know, these are the things that are occurring in terms of the agenda that's being pushed. And the thing that I learned in the last 7 years in the Texas legislature is this is not rhetoric. This is not for campaign purposes only. It works in campaigns, but this stuff is actually being passed into law.
And which is frightening from my perspective, because the GLBT community especially, I mean, they like to, the Republican Party likes to deliver on stuff like this.
Yeah,
and they did it for a number of years here in Texas until there was a change.
Look, they couldn't. I just go back to the Southern strategy.
Yeah,
the politics of it, and there are people who actually have, you know, they believe this stuff, and they do. I mean, whether for religious purposes or just, you know, they believe it. But the strategy is to take the other, anybody who's not them.
Mm-hmm.
And make them the demons, the bad people. And so it works in a couple of ways. If someone doesn't like you because you are transgendered, or doesn't like someone because they are lesbian or gay, it's a double benefit. They get a twofer. They get to win elections and step on the necks of the folks, too. So, you know, that's what's one of the interesting things is that this is accomplishing two goals. But let's do this. Let's just say this.
Okay.
And I want to give people some hope. Hope is that the generation coming behind our generation, the generation of my son and daughter and a little bit older than that, that generation thinks differently.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of time if we keep working on the issues of equality before all of this is undone. But we can't, as society, we can't let it continue, and we have to start now to push back this draconian way of thinking and keeping it out of the law, and then going back and removing from the law this use of statute to deny rights to individuals. Whether it doesn't matter who it is, but in particular, the use of statute to deny rights to the GLBT community, which has been the major thrust of the so-called religious right over the last, goodness gracious, since 1995 and before, maybe 1990, at least the 80s.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we've been speaking with State Representative Garnett Coleman, and we've been trying to inform you about the differences in the Republican and the Democratic state platforms. And I want to thank you very much for coming in and spending some time with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Call Jennifer anytime. And that's what's great about KPFT, that we can have these discussions in the free airways of public radio, community supported and owned. And I'm a big fan. As a matter of fact, we're in my district right now, and I'm a yeah. big fan of KPFT, and I know that KPFT is only going to get better, but never change from getting information that normally doesn't get to people, getting that out so that folks can understand the world.
Thank you very much. And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
I'm Michelle Pleasant.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 17th, 2010.
Por sí al matrimonio gay o por no al matrimonio gay. 33 votos a favor, 27...
A group of LGBT people and their supporters broke into euphoric cheers at a chilly vigil in the Plaza of the Two Congresses in Buenos Aires with the announcement that Argentina's Senate had approved a civil marriage equality bill in the early morning hours of July 15th. The vote, following almost 15 hours of debate, came at 4:05 a.m. 33 in favor, 27 opposed, and 3 abstentions. The lower house, the Chamber of Deputies, had already passed the bill, and the center-left government of President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner strongly supported it. But passage in the upper house was a bit of a surprise, since a Senate committee last week had narrowly voted to recommend that the bill be rejected. Argentina will become the first country in Latin America to offer full civil marriage rights to gays and lesbians, including adoption. But same-gender couples from other countries aren't eligible. The law applies only to citizens and legal residents.
The Senate approval came despite a well-organized opposition campaign led by the Roman Catholic Church, which claims 90% of the Argentine population. Along with rallies held by the bill's supporters, a march on Congress against it last week drew some 60,000 people, including children and elderly nuns. In a letter to the monasteries of Buenos Aires, Argentina's highest-ranking Roman Catholic cleric warned that passage of the marriage equality bill would be the work of the devil. Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio called it a destructive pretension against the plan of God. We are not talking about a mere bill, he continued, but rather a machination of the father of lies that seeks to confuse and deceive the children of God. President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner said the church's tone was reminiscent of medieval times and the Inquisition. And according to public opinion polls, a clear majority supported the bill. The first marriages are scheduled to take place in mid-August. Argentina will join the Marriage Equality Club with current members Belgium, Canada, Iceland, the Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, South Africa, Spain, Sweden, Mexico City, Connecticut, Iowa, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Washington, D.C.
Finland could be next. According to reports this week, the Justice Ministry has started drafting a bill to open civil marriage and adoption to lesbian and gay couples. Justice Minister Tuija Brax has said that Finland's constitution bans discrimination based on gender and that public opinion supports letting same-gender couples marry. The law could be in place by 2012. Elsewhere, a federal lawsuit in the U.S. challenging the constitutionality of Don't Ask, Don't Tell began in a Riverside, California courtroom this week. The trial, which is expected to conclude after about 2 weeks of testimony, comes 6 years after the Log Cabin Republicans filed suit against the military's ban on openly lesbi-gay service members. Attorneys for the National Gay Republican Group argue that the policy is a violation of due process and the free speech rights of gays and lesbians in the armed forces. They say it also disadvantages partners, families, and colleagues who are forced to keep silent or risk outing a friend or loved one. President Barack Obama has repeatedly pledged to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but his Justice Department, claiming it's required to defend all federal laws, has aggressively supported the policy in court. In opening statements, their lawyers called the trial both unnecessary and inappropriate. Their position is that Congress had a legitimate government interest when it passed Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which was then signed by President Bill Clinton in 1993. Log Cabin attorney Dan Woods, who's worked on the case since 2004, told The Advocate that the government strategy would be to call no witnesses and to rely only on documents from 1993. They've chosen a conservative strategy, he said, and they're not trying to prove that the policy has worked. Woods and his staff have called former service members, some testifying in painful detail about the stress and abuse they endured prior to their discharges under the policy. Expert witnesses have included Aaron Belkin, a preeminent authority on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and director of the Palm Center, a California-based think tank that studies armed forces-related sexuality and gender identity issues. Lawrence J. Korb, once an advisor to President Ronald Reagan and currently a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, is also scheduled to testify. The longtime critic of Don't Ask, Don't Tell says that the policy fails to further any legitimate military objectives. Meanwhile, prosecutors in Washington, D.C. dropped all charges this week against two gay service members who were twice arrested for chaining themselves to a White House fence to protest Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Iraq War veteran and Arabic linguist Lieutenant Dan Choi, whose discharge under the policy is under review even as he continues to serve in the National Guard, and Army Captain James Petrangelo, who was booted after he came out in 2006, had been charged with failure to obey police orders at their March and April protests. Choi and his attorney had subpoenaed President Barack Obama to appear, but an attorney for the prosecution said the subpoena wasn't served. She declined to comment on why the government dropped the case right before the trial was set to begin. In a press statement, Choi promised that, "We won't stop pressing for repeal and pressuring those standing in the way until the day comes when not one more gay or lesbian service member is fired. And as of today," he added, "the president refuses to tell us when that day will actually come." The Pentagon sent a survey about Don't Ask, Don't Tell last week to some 400,000 active duty and reserve troops that immediately drew criticism from LGBT advocacy groups, including Service Members United and the Service Members Legal Defense Network. It's part of the Defense Department's 10-month study to be completed by December 1st, ostensibly about how to best implement repeal. According to CNN, the questionnaire, in part, asks military personnel how they would react if they had to share a room, bathrooms, and open bay showers in a war zone with service members believed to be gay or lesbian. Lieutenant Colonel Victor Fehrenbach has been a pilot in the U.S. Air Force for almost 19 years. He's flown some 400 combat hours in both Iraq and Afghanistan, but he was outed in 2008 by a vindictive civilian. Even though he never told, his discharge under Don't Ask, Don't Tell is pending. Rachel Maddow asked him on her MSNBC show this week about that Pentagon survey.
You know, there are things in combat that we just don't think about. You think about where your next meal is going to come from. You think about your next mission. You think about your family back home, and you just don't think about who's showering next to you. It's questions like that that got specific seem somewhat insulting. I think the survey is unnecessary completely because, for one reason, 24 of our allies have already ended their bans, and so they've already looked at these issues that we have to address, and they've implemented effective alternative solutions. So all we need to do is call the United Kingdom, call Israel. And nobody asked me if I was comfortable while I was getting shot at 8 times over Baghdad. Nobody asked me if I was comfortable in my 13-hour mission over Afghanistan. In 1948, when we integrated the armed services, President Truman didn't take a survey to do that. He did it because it was the right thing to do. And in the 70s and in the 90s, when we integrated women into the academies and into combat units, again, we didn't take a survey. We did it because it was the right thing to do, and our military became stronger because of it.
Lieutenant Colonel Victor Fehrenbach said that he'd been told that a recommendation for his honorable discharge under Don't Ask, Don't Tell had been sent to the Secretary of the Air Force in early May for one final legal review, which was expected to take 2 to 3 weeks. He didn't know how to interpret having heard nothing more since then. The veteran combat pilot will celebrate his 19th anniversary in the Air Force in August, with only one more year until retirement, if he makes it that far.
In other news, the highest court in Washington, D.C. this week rejected an effort by right-wing groups to place a Proposition 8-like initiative on the ballot to overturn the U.S. Capitol's marriage equality law. The 5-4 ruling by the D.C. Court of Appeals supported local officials who said that such an attempt would violate the city's Human Rights Act, which bans discrimination based on sexual orientation. The district began issuing marriage licenses in March after opponents asked the U.S. Supreme Court to block them. Chief Justice John Roberts didn't directly address the legalities, but said that the issue was the province of local courts. Subsequent attempts in Congress to block the law, it has the power to override D.C. legislation, also failed.
And finally, Mexico City's tourism minister is offering a free honeymoon to the first lesbian or gay newlyweds in Argentina, which virtually legalized civil marriage equality this week. Alejandro Rojas said in a statement that it was in recognition of tolerance, but also to promote gay-friendly tourism in Mexico City. Authorities in the Mexican capital, which passed its own marriage equality law last year, are offering airline tickets to the first queer couple to wed under the new Argentine law. They're also asking for support from the city's hotels and restaurants and in the beach resort of Cancun. Around 15% of world tourism, which totals about 150 million people each year, is gay-friendly, according to Rojas. He said that gay tourists are discerning, respectful, and spend 47% more than their heterosexual counterparts.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 17th, 2010. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Pleasant.
And I'm Sherry Lunn.
Album Safe. That is Jason and DeMarco, who are in the studio right now on Queer Voices.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And the beautiful music you've heard was from Jason and DeMarco. And you may have know about Jason and DeMarco, but you may not know about something that they have just begun. It's a community program. And first of all, welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the program.
Well, it's a nonprofit organization, 501c3, and this has really been an amazing journey for us, because over the years of traveling and touring and singing as Jason and DeMarco, which has been 8 years on the road, one of the things we've gotten are literally thousands of emails from teens, from young, really from all ages, but especially from teens and young adults that are going through the coming out process. And the emails, you know, it's just heart-wrenching emails sometimes. Sometimes it's just, you know, I haven't come out to my family yet. I'm afraid to. Some who have come out, they've been kicked out. And so over the years, you know, there's been emotional support for them, and we've sent some to Trevor Project, some to Matthew Shepard Foundation, but it's been very few physical resources to actually be able to send them if they've been in need. And so this concept for SAFE, which is an acronym for Safe Affirming Family Environment, is really a work that we feel we've been called to reach out to this community, and specifically to the community here in Houston. We're beginning the nonprofit here and opening a drop-in center, which will be for youth and young adults. And we're going to be doing a lot of work with the foster community. So we're going to be forming a community and a network of foster parents who are affirming. So it's not necessarily that they're GLBT foster parents. It's that they're simply certified foster parents who are willing to foster a GLBT youth, and also transitional housing for young adults. So if it's young adults that aren't necessarily in the system, establishing safe houses for those young adults, so that when they come in, we basically have a database of people that just literally have an extra room in their house that say, you know what, I have an extra room. And these young adults are all over the age of 18. And so it's basically us connecting an adult with another adult. And these house parents are going to offer a space for these young adults to stay. Part of the organization will also be this drop-in center will offer food. You know, we're going to be giving free meals away.
Oh, wonderful.
Free clothes. If some of these young adults, they're not necessarily homeless, but a lot of them are simply in need, so we'll have clothes where if they want to go for a job interview, you know, they can come into a clothes closet and they can borrow clothes that they need to go for these job interviews. And so it's really forming a community, forming a space that's a safe, affirming family environment, and trying to get these kids and these young adults in family situations where it's not a shelter, it's not an overnight, an emergency, temporary situation, but we're getting them into families that are really willing to nurture them and be an environment that'll support them long-term in their journey.
Where are you at in this process? Is this something that just started, or are you kind of established, and are you able to take people in yet?
Yeah, well, this is the exciting thing, is we are, we actually applied last year for a nonprofit, and we are officially a nonprofit in the state of Texas.
Whoa.
Yes, it was a process.
Congratulations. I know
that
process.
Yeah, it was a process. So we're a nonprofit in the state of Texas, and we actually have found a space that we are interested in right now. And this space will operate as the drop-in center. It's right in Montrose.
Oh.
And it'll be a drop-in center. It'll also be a meeting place. Because what we see is forming a community of foster parents. And if there's any foster parents listening right now that are GLBT friendly, please visit safehouseforall.org, because one of the things we're going to be doing is creating our own databases. Right now within Child Protective Services, there's no way for them to distinguish which foster parents are gay friendly and which ones aren't. And so what we're going to be doing is creating our own database of families that are currently certified to foster, or ones that are interested in getting certified to foster, specifically to foster a GLBT youth. And I have to share a really quick story. I just met with an attorney this week, and one of the stories that I thought was so amazing is there was a 14-year-old boy. He's in the foster care system, and he is apparently, you know, one of let's just say it's not a secret that he's gay. He's a very flamboyant,
outwardly visible. Yes, I got you.
And he was placed in a foster home, and the parents specifically said, "You cannot listen." And I'm not going to go into detail because I don't want to put it out there, but there was an artist that they said, "You can't listen to because they'll make you more gay."
Oh, no.
And so this young man at 14 turned the radio up as loud as he could one day playing this artist, and then he went out and was, you know, crashing the windows out of the house. So all of a sudden you have a 14-year-old boy that's then considered high risk. He's put back into the system, and now it's really hard, and no one's going to foster him because he has a record, when really he's just an amazing young man who, you know, wasn't allowed to be who he is. And so these are the kind of kids we're going to be working with to provide foster parents to CPS agencies and say, look, we have an amazing gay couple over here, you know, or straight couple, and they're willing to take in, you know, a GLBT youth, and especially transgendered youth are having a huge issue, and even Covenant Houses and places that are out there to support. There's still trans youth or questioning youth. There's still a lot of homophobia out there, and so we're
and transphobia, especially.
Especially transphobia. Mm-hmm.
So what do we want our listeners to do? Do we want them to provide the foster homes, or do we want them to provide resources to your new nonprofit, or what are we asking from the listeners of Queer Voices?
Right now, if you are a certified foster family, if you would sign up on our website, that would be wonderful. If you're interested in getting certified, go to the website and also sign up. The website is actually a social network, so you can not only sign up, you can actually create your own profile and
email. Let's get that website
What's your website?
It's safehouseforall, FORALL.org, safehouseforall.org. And then in addition to that, of course, you know, we're raising funds right now to try to lease our first, to actually lease and open the drop-in center. So that's going to be the next big step for us.
Now, do you need volunteers? If we have people?
We can always use volunteers. We're going to be opening up the closed shelter portion, going to be taking food donations, you know, because we're going to be giving food away every day once we open this. So there's going to be a lot of places we're going out to get food from the community, to also give out to this demographic. And then I'm going to let DeMarco talk about our new video, because as you heard coming in, our song Safe.
Yes, and let's talk about the
I
song.
I love that sound, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is this one working?
Oh, yes, it is.
You both have a microphone.
Yeah, we just filmed our latest video for Safe, the song you heard, and it's wonderful because since our video on Logo that went to number one in 2006, we haven't really had a comeback video. So people have been waiting, and we're so excited that the theme of this is going to tie in with this nonprofit, because it's really, the chorus of the song is Thank You for Loving Me, and Jason got the idea that it's normally what people would think is another romantic song of Jason and DeMarco's, where you're singing that to your partner, but really it's from the child's perspective, reaching out to this, you know, foster parents or couple that's brought them into their home and given them a new life. Thank you for loving me. And you'll get to see various stories on a baby being adopted, a young adult be taken off the street, an abused little 9-year-old girl. And Jason and I are you know, characters in that story as well. So
I would love to see this video. Where can I see it?
It's probably going to be ready the end of the year. We're actually going to see the first draft of this immediately after our interview tonight. So
it's in editing. So the editing process
takes... That's where it becomes smooth and polished.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
It's going to be a great promotional tool for the organization as well.
What about the song? I thought it was beautiful.
Thank you.
How do I get the song?
It's on our album, Safe, which is out there. So the song, the title cut of the album is called Safe, but it's also on our album, Safe. It's out on iTunes. It's available on our website.
And your website is?
JasonDeMarco.com.
Okay, good.
So lots of exciting stuff happening. There's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of kids out there that are not in safe homes, and anyone that feels a purpose with youth or young adults, especially GLBT youth or young adults, this is an organization I think that'll really speak to you.
And email you if you're interested in foster caring or already registered foster caring, somebody GLBT friendly, and that's
safehouseforall.org.
Great.
Very good. Well, thank you for coming on the program. Is there anything else you want to let our listeners know?
Just, we're glad to be in Houston, to be part of this community. And so it's we're all in this together, and we can't do it without you.
And we appreciate you being here and coming on Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Make your gift to KPFT go twice as far. Many employers sponsor corporate matching gift programs that will match any charitable contribution made by their employees. To increase the value of your gift, contact your human resources office to see if your company has a matching gift program and obtain the appropriate form. Follow the instructions on the form and mail it to KPFT, 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006. We'll verify your gift and notify your company. Your employer may also match your volunteer time. Ask your human resources office for eligibility requirements. Participating in your company's matching gift program is a simple yet powerful way to increase your support of KPFT without any additional cost to you. Don't delay. Get your company to match your gift to KPFT today. You are listening to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, radio for peace.
Maybe your favorite music is blues, or perhaps it's international, maybe even hip-hop, or old-fashioned rock and roll. Want to find out which bands are playing around town this week? Go to our website, kpft.org, and check out the music calendar to find out when some of the finest in blues, country, world, jazz, hip-hop, and rock will be performing. Again, that's kpft.org. If you or your band would like your band, venue, or musical event included on the calendar, send it in to music at kpft.org. Hope to see you around town. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT, Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
This is Jennifer Renee again, and we have in our studio Josephine Titsworth, and we're going to talk about the Texas Transgender Non-Discrimination Summit. This is the second annual.
Second.
And I was at the first one, and I plan on being there tomorrow. the thing is, it's rather unique in the sense that it's a conversation, remembering from last year, and I'm going to let you fill in about this year, a conversation about what's going on from the different aspects. Because I remember there was ACLU representative, Lambda Legal, different schools and colleges, and I found it so refreshing and enlightening, especially. I was taking proficious notes, so because there was so much to learn and know. Uh-huh. And so this is the second annual. Last time it was over at U of H.
U of H. It's a graduate college of social work.
And it's at Rice University. So why the change? And tell us about it.
Well, part of the deal is to move it around from university to university so everyone gets a crack at this.
Texas A&M next?
Well, I'll tell you what. All universities get that bumped for Texas A&M.
That was a joke. Texas A&M is not tea friendly.
Or Baylor. But anyways.
But Rice University is. It was one of the first to be trans-inclusive.
It was the very first in the state of Texas. The very first. And right after that, not long after that, the University of Texas at Austin included the phrase gender identity expression in their non-discrimination statement. Now,
did a little more research, and I found out that the South Texas College of Law has this statement.
Yes.
But the way it's written for students. Now, I contacted our friend Phyllis Fry.
Yes.
Who adjuncts out there.
An outspoken advocate of transgender rights.
Absolutely. And I asked Phyllis, Phyllis, how come only students are covered here? And Phyllis got on the horn and got to doing some inquiry, and come to find out there had been a typo. Everybody's included at South Texas College of Law.
So you can be trans and work there as well as be a student.
Absolutely, 100%.
Excellent, excellent. So tell us about, now, first of all, this is a two-day event.
Yes.
And it's in the middle of the week, you know, that sort of eliminates a lot of people who have jobs that can't break away. But I understand that you've had a great response in people signing up for this.
We were totally caught by surprise on this. I said, last year when you were there, we asked everyone, what day of the week do you want this at? And the majority said, during the week.
Oh, I remember.
And so,
I did not vote that way, but I remember.
And so we went ahead and scheduled during the week. We had budgeted for 50 people, and we planned on 50 people. Well, we've got almost 100 people coming.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. That's compared to the 20 we had.
25 were at the table last year from 6 different universities. This year,
we were in a large conference room with Sabatia.
Yeah.
And so where is it going to be this year?
It's going to
be 100 people.
It's going to be in the Fondren Library in the, I forgot what room they called it. Brian's going to shoot me for that one.
Uh-oh.
But it's going to be in a huge conference room. It's so beautiful in there. And it's going to be a very huge conference room. And last year it was just one day, but we had to make it 2 days this year because of the evaluations we got last year. People last year commented they wanted breakout groups.
So I remember,
yeah.
You talked about that.
And so in order to have the breakout groups work effectively, it needed to be a two-day conference. And so we've set up 5 breakout groups going to 5 different work groups. In other words, if one individual comes in, they're going to end up going to each one of the breakout groups. Everyone gets a chance to go to every one of them. And it's just exciting.
Now, when they say breakout groups, now, in just a moment, we'll get to the schedule so people will have a better understanding. Well, breakout groups, you know, you've got 100 people, and you're just going to break up into groups of 20? Something like that?
Yeah, 17 to 20 people per group. We're going to have 5 groups, so we're probably looking. It really depends on the final count that comes in, because we still got people registering tonight.
Good heavens. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I acknowledge the support for the community. Well, tell us about the schedule.
Okay, well, it's going to start tomorrow morning. Registration's at 9:30. Now, if anyone out there wishes to come and learn how to make changes on your campus, you can still come. You can still come and attend the summit. But because you didn't pre-register, I can't promise you lunch. Anyone that pre-registered got lunch, free lunch.
Yep. Bring your own lunch if you didn't pre-register.
Brown bag it. And but you can come at 9:30 for registration. Starbucks is providing all our coffee both days.
Bless their heart.
Yeah, down there on Montrose and Hawthorne. Stop by and tell them thank you. And so we're going to start at 9:30 tomorrow morning. And we're going to have a bunch of welcoming type stuff and kind of giving you the logistics of what's going on, this kind of stuff. And then we're going to get to our keynote speaker.
And who's that going to be?
Randall Terrell. He's the legislative director for Equality Texas.
Oh, okay. I know Randall.
And so he's going to speak to us and talk to us about the legislative issues. And then ACLU is back.
Oh, good.
They've come back. And I presented to him in this break between summits some case law. And I said, look, I need the understanding on how we as advocates can use this to create change.
And to briefly digress back to that, what I found out and what you can find out if you go to this is that there's case law being created all over the country. And
that's right.
Only a few minor pieces, you know, major pieces, but they're minor in the sense of the total number of cases out there creating case law for in the United States. You only hear of a few now
that's
and
right.
then, but there's many more than that. And that's what I learned
right.
from ACLU, because they just ran down a list of, you know, I'm going, wow, this is, you know, because in our own community, we're a little bit, unless you're really out there as an advocate or an activist, you don't hear as much as you really need to hear.
That's correct.
The ball is actually being moved forward.
It is. We are making progress. Right now, we have Rice, we have UT Austin, South Texas College of Law, but the University of Houston system just recently issued the Issa Lopez memo, which I think I was on the show a while back.
We talked about that because I was there too. Which has precipitated a review in HISD in their policies.
Very good.
You know, whether the language changes immediately, but their policies are being reviewed.
Awesome.
Because of that, because of the case law created.
Mm-hmm. You have to keep doing the research. If you're a lawyer, you know about the case law. But if you're just an advocate like me, I'm just a simple advocate, you have to go in and you have to dig this information out and go to these sources and find out.
Now, and I'm going to, you're into the advocate. You're also, you and Brian Riddell.
Mm-hmm. Riddle.
Riddle. Okay.
Riddle.
Sorry about that, Brian.
Yeah.
I'll make it up to you. Riddle, I have organized this.
Uh-huh.
And but you, what are your credentials? You have some extensive credentials that I'm quite acknowledge you for. So,
well, I'm a licensed master social worker, and I'm also a PhD student at the University of Houston Graduate College of Social Work.
Hmm.
And I've been extremely active in the community for a long time now.
Yeah, atta girl.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so ACLU, let's go back to our schedule. ACLU has their presentation.
And they're going to do a presentation on the case law I presented to them. They had, Maida, how do I pronounce her last name? Asofsky. I have trouble with names sometimes, folks.
We apologize to you.
But anyways, Maida is has two interns that did a lot of research on the case law I presented to them.
Okay.
And they're coming back to tell the audience what their research discovered.
Okay.
And so this is going to be really interesting, because when you're out there working on trying to be a change agent and changing the policies, the more you know, the more effective you will be.
And just knowing the cases that have occurred and what the judge has said in these cases,
that's right,
it has a cumulative effect.
Absolutely.
And many of these cases had, you know, financial awards involved in them, which many institutions don't want, especially they don't want to lose a case, you know.
Nope.
And if by changing their policies they don't lose a case, they're more likely to change that policy.
Well, you know, as long as any institution has not included transgender or sexual orientation into their policies, they are running a risk of litigation. Litigation costs money. They don't want to spend money. Our tuition is already way too high. Mm-hmm. Since the current governor took office, our tuition has gone up 72%.
Well, he has to pay for that place he's renting.
Oh, and his magazine subscriptions.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, ACLU, then what happens?
Well, after ACLU, we have we go into a break. We're going to have a break there, and we're going to have what we call a chocolate break.
Okay.
We're going to have some chocolate out there so you can just really deal with your calories and get all that chocolate sugar energy going. Because
for the afternoon session.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And then we're going to start our first and second breakout groups.
Okay.
And those breakout groups are going to be Safe Zone, and that's one group. Transgender Inclusion is another group. Current Legislation is another group. And Domestic Partner Benefits is another group.
Oh, okay.
And the one I'll be doing is Intersecting Ideologies, gender, race, religion, and culture.
That was a mouthful.
Yes, it was.
What does that mean?
Well, that when we're out there and we're trying to change policy,
okay,
and we're up against the opposition, what we need to understand is we need to understand the culture that's out there. What are we going to be facing? How is religion going to impact what we're trying to get done? How do you deal with that? How do you work within that framework? How does race come in to try and create change on a campus? It's a very critical piece of this. And so this is why these ideologies intersecting. They all intersect with getting gender identity expression instituted at these institutions.
Well, that sounds fascinating.
Oh, I love it.
Because you stop and think about that. And in my own personal experience in trying to create change has been that you have to understand the culture you're talking to.
Absolutely.
And how, try to get inside their head and see how they think to be able to reach them in the sense of being able to communicate in such a way that they understand that it's really in their best interest to make some changes.
Absolutely.
So that's that great. That sounds like a breakout group I might try there.
Actually,
if you let me.
Well, actually, everyone's going to get to go through every one of these breakout groups.
Oh, okay.
That's why we have, we're going to break it out. We do it once, we do it twice on the first day.
Oh, okay.
Because you're going to rotate. And the third day, we're going to do groups 3, 4, and 5, and you'll be rotating through every one of these breakout groups.
So speed dating.
Yeah.
But getting information concerning that. Okay, is that the end of the first day?
No.
Oh, okay. What else happens after the breakout? What happens?
Well, we kind of close for the day, but we have a special.
What's that?
The TG Center and the Houston Transgender Unity Committee.
Over on Pacific. What's that address over there?
I got it written down right here. It's on a 604 Pacific.
Yeah.
We'll be hosting a dinner. And so we get to go over there to the Transgender Center and have dinner with everybody and socialize.
Okay. So registration at 9:30. This is tomorrow.
It's tomorrow.
Tuesday. 9:30 for registration. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't registered, show up with a brown bag because lunch isn't included.
Uh-huh.
And then it's going to end about what time in the afternoon?
It should end by 5:15 in the afternoon. And then you kind of refresh yourself up, and then you go for the social
And it's over there. What time is it? 6?
It starts at 6:30.
6:30. So there's plenty of time, so you can go from 9:30 all the way till all. Okay, now, that we finish tomorrow. So the second day begins when?
Second day.
Other than Wednesday. I want to make sure I got that one.
The second day is definitely Wednesday.
Okay.
And it'll start. We'll have a continental breakfast. We're providing that.
At what time?
At 8:30 in the morning.
Okay.
And then at 9 o'clock, we're going to start our breakout groups again. We're going to finish the 3, 4, and 5.
That you started tomorrow. Okay.
Yes. And so we're going to finish 3, 4, and 5. We'll have a break in between there.
And then what happens?
And then we have lunch, and then we're going to do some role play. And we're going to put some scenarios up there so people can see what some of the things you're going to face.
And as an activist or advocate going out to talk to various groups and institutions, what you'll face.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
You get to experience that.
Yes.
That should be really a remarkable experience.
It really is. Actually, I'm waiting for Kristen, who is the professor at Texas State University, to show me the role play that she's written. But I've written two role plays from actual experiences I've had.
Oh, that's going to be incredible.
Yeah, I'm going to play one of the characters.
Right. If someone's sitting at home and they want to be part of this, mm-hmm. what do they need to do right now?
They need to get on their computer and email TXTGSummit, SUMMIT, @gmail.com. That's all you got to do.
Go there, send an email, or is that the website?
We have a Facebook page.
All right, Facebook page.
Called Texas Transgender Nondiscrimination Summit.
Okay, and if you can't type all of that out, you can go to the email and just say you're coming.
Say you're coming.
And then show up tomorrow morning at where?
At 9:30 at the Fondren Library, third floor, and get your registration packet.
All right. We've been talking with Josephine Tisworthy, and we have been talking about the Texas Transgender Non-Discrimination Summit at Rice University tomorrow morning. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
This is Queer Voices.
Guy who thinks he is fly, but also known as a buster. He always talking about what he wants and just sits on his broguess. Oh no, I don't want your number. I don't want to give you mine, and no, I don't want to meet you nowhere. I don't want none of your time. I don't want no scrub. Scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging out the passenger side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me. I don't want no scrub. Scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging out the passenger side of his best friend's ride. There's a scrub checking me, but it seems kind of weak, and I know that he cannot approach me. Cause I'm looking like glass, he's looking like trash. I don't wanna get with this deadbeat ass. No, I don't want your number. I don't wanna give you mine, and no, I don't wanna meet you nowhere. I don't want none of your time. Side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me. I don't want no scrub. A scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging at the passenger side of his best friend's ride. If you don't have a car and you're walking, oh yeah, son, I'm talking to you. If you're living at home with your mama, oh yeah, son, I'm talking to you. I say if you've got a shorty that you don't show love, oh yeah, son, I'm talking to you. You wanna get with me with no money, oh no. No, 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 I don't want no scrub. Side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me. I don't want no scrub. The scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging out the passenger side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me. Yeah. I don't want your punk ass, no. Hanging out the passenger side of his best friend's ride.
Well, that's an interesting cover of the hip-hop song from a few years ago, No Scrubs. That was Avi Wisna, and it's from an album called Something New. It was recorded this year, and the label is Jazz, and of course we got it from J.D. Doyle, whom we thank for the music. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee again, and we have in our studio Tim Brookover, president of the Houston GLBT Community Center.
Hi, Jennifer.
And we have Lisa Jackson, who is the Volunteer League Director. Can I call it? Is that would be that a correct title for you?
Yes, most definitely.
Oh, you're the one that's out there doing it.
Most definitely. Thank you, Jennifer.
And a volunteer league is something new that's recently been started, hasn't it?
Right. We've as the center has re-energized since last year, we needed to revitalize our volunteer organization because the center is an all-volunteer organization, so we really rely on our volunteers. And Lisa is our board secretary and volunteer coordinator, and she grabbed a hold of the volunteer responsibility and has just really taken off with it, and came up with the Center Volunteer League, which is her name, and I just think it's fantastic because
it's great.
Sounds like a bunch of superheroes. Ta-da!
Yes, the Volunteer League.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice.
And it's fitting because our volunteers are superheroes to us. So Lisa's just really taken off with running the Center Volunteer League, and it's just been great.
Well, tell us about the league, Lisa.
Okay, what the Volunteer League focus is to come in and try to mandate the different program events that we have upcoming. We also have staffing that we're starting to schedule at our front desk. And
since that's wonderful, because I don't know how many times I go by there and there wasn't anybody there.
Oh, yeah, but now we have... You know, we have people mandating the desks. We have several organizations. We just had our coming out group this evening, and I went on in, and Burton Bagby Gross, he's our facultator for it, and I just sat there and assist him, and we had a really great meeting, and, you know, a lot of people come out. Now, we're also trying to get good, dedicated volunteers to come, so we're planning to have a Recruit Me Now drive, and we're planning to have it in September the 25th, so we're in the planning process right now. I have a very good guy, Mario, who has joined as one of my team leaders, who's going to be working with me on trying to find a location, and we're going to be serving you guys some grilled burgers and some chips, you know. You know we love to eat.
Food. Oh, yeah, you'll get people out. You're serving food.
Yes.
Always.
And Tim, our president, I just want to take this time to just thank Tim for believing in me and for him, you know, being so dedicated to the community center. We have a good leader. You know, when you have a good motivational leader, that helps you to try to give that 100% plus because, you know, you're being led in a positive way.
Oh, well, thanks, Lisa. That's nice. Well, we have such a great group over at the center. We've always had some really great people involved in the center, but we have a nice synergy with the people who are there, and we work really well together. And some people have, you know, everybody has different strengths, and, you know, we can play off of one another, and I just think that's really very positive.
Well, the center, you know, it had for a while, almost a year, almost 2 years, it's sort of just gone quiet.
We had a couple of rough years, as I say.
Well, you know, I'm being polite.
You're being polite, and I appreciate that. You're right. And I think, you know, Lisa was one of the board members who we came together last year, sort of towards late summer, about this time, actually, last year. And, you know, there had been some of the different board members that had some personal problems and needed to step out for a while, and I was one of those. But we came back together and said, okay, let's really commit ourselves. We're going to make this work. We're looking ahead to the 15th anniversary in 2011. If we're going to make this work, now's the time to do it. And since then, I think we've really been doing a good job and creating some new programs, revitalizing some old programs, doing some things we've never done before, stepping outside of our comfort zone, doing some different things. I think it's a very exciting time.
Well, I can attest to that because I've been doing this show now for over 4 years. And, I mean, the last couple of years, it was hard to find something that the community center was doing,
right?
And something that you could talk about and be sure that it was going on,
right?
And so now, I mean, you know, I'm being fair.
Yeah. No, you're right.
But then now, you know, every show I get in on my email, I get the schedule for the week, what's coming up, I print it out, I bring it here, and we talk about it. We let everybody know what's going on in the community center.
And that's wonderful.
Well, it's something we can count on. It's something people can do because it's vitally important. The AIDS support group is excellent. And, of course, the coming out event on Monday nights. You know, by the time we announce it, it's too late. But, you know, if they remember, it's a week away. You can get there. But you can go, you know, let people know what the community center is doing.
Well, and it's amazing with the coming out group. I think those of us who've, you know, been out for a while. You know, forget what that was like. And then with people with HIV, those of us who've been around for a while and kind of know about kind of the medications, and I mean, nothing's easy, and I'm not downplaying that, but that there are some options and there is some help out there, and there are people who are long-term survivors. But then there are some people who I know who come to the HIV support group who don't have that information. And they need it. And the support group has provided that information. And again, you know, it's easy to forget that there are people out there who still are coming into the community, whether it's the GLBT community or the HIV community or both, who are hungry for that information. And so I think we're providing a real service. And Chris Burton, Burton and Lisa are the facilitators of the coming out group and do a tremendous job. And our facilitator for the HIV support group is Chris Escalante, who recently joined us from San Antonio. And he's just incredible.
He's doing a wonderful job. And another thing that our main focus is at the community center, I know me and Tim and Burton have talked about, is that we're serving our community. You know, we want our community, you know, because we don't discriminate. So anyone who's interested, be it someone retired or someone who has an hour out of a month who wants to come and just be a part, because we have resource books that we need to update. So it's always something to do at the community center. So we're just calling out to all of our GLBT community to come out and, you know, let me tell you about the wonderful things that we have set forth for the community center.
Well, there's one question I had, which I was very concerned about. And of course, in this last week, I saw the little notation, had heard that the Sky Bar was closing.
Right.
And it was sort of, the grumble was, oh my God, they're going to close that building.
Right.
Well, which you know, that's where the community center is housed.
Right. We're housed in second floor, 3400 Montrose building, which is the building that Sky Bar on the top floor was housed in. And actually, there was an article that appeared in the Houston Chronicle a couple weeks ago, and someone had emailed it to me before I read it in the paper. And I actually had to read the article a couple times because the article made it sound as though the building was closing down.
Which is what I read.
Right.
And I
knew that the building hadn't closed down because I had just been there that morning.
Yeah.
But still, I thought, So I read it again and realized that it was confusing. So immediately, Burton contacted the building management. He's our liaison. And they confirmed, no, the building is not closing. Sky Bar had moved out. And the quote that the building manager gave was, it was a mutual decision. So you can take
whatever
that
means.
Take that for whatever it
yeah,
is.
Yeah. You write the rest of the story yourself.
And, you know, of course, that happens with bars. I mean, Sky Bar had been there for a number of years. But, you know, bars have
a lot of things up there.
A life cycle. It had been Cody's, and it had been
I remember Cody's.
Many other things. Sky Bar is gone. But the building,
I can remember, I remember of Cody's.
But the building is open. You know, we're still there. The building is, in fact, the building has recently had a little bit of work done, and the building needs a lot of work. We are the first to admit that, but it's had some work done. The AC system is better than it's ever been. So that's a good thing. That's something we've been kind of struggling with for a number of years.
Has the management given you an indication what they're going to do with?
Well, the building was sold in February.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
The long-term owners, Emirates, which was a company called Emirates, sold the building, and new owners took it over, and then the new owners hired a management firm, and that's who we deal with. And they've done a good job, and they have a big job with that building. We have been told that the building may be sold again. You know, like a lot of commercial real estate, you know, that gets flipped, and
That's a valuable piece of property where it's sitting.
It's a valuable location, absolutely.
Great location.
But for now, you know, we're secure in where we are. We decided to, you know, to stay and wait and see what happens. And then, as I've always said, and, you know, we're always very candid. I mean, we know this isn't our permanent home.
What's the long-term, you know, that dream out there long-term?
Well, the long-term, what I, you know, I call the shining city on the hill, is we want our own space. We want our own building, and which ideally we would occupy in conjunction with other community groups.
Right.
Because we're always at our best when we collaborate with other groups, and certainly mm-hmm. think yeah. having
well,
a,
we
a home.
Contribute to each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
that,
yes.
Our home should be just like that.
Yes.
But that's a long, I mean, honestly, that's a long term. I mean, we're talking, you know, a number of years, because a great deal of money is going to have to be raised, and we're going to have to identify a spot. And, of course, in Montrose.
Unless some benefactor just...
Unless there's a benefactor out there who'd like to give us money.
Most definitely.
Or a building.
A sugar daddy or a sugar mama. Or both. So, yeah, that's our long-term goal. And we'll get there. It's you know, it will take a while. And in the meantime, you never know. Someone might show up and say, hey, we want to give you a big check to kickstart your capital campaign fund. But that's something we're hoping for.
Well, one of my favorite things has come back, and that's Queer Bingo.
We're so glad that you came. First Saturday Queer Bingo. We've brought it back. It's the first Saturday of the month at One's a Meal Restaurant, 812 Westheimer, and it's game start at 4:30, and it is just a blast. We have so much fun.
Oh, yeah. You've got to repeat that. It starts at 4:30 in the afternoon.
4:30 in the afternoon. Yes. So it's
in our community, that could be confused with 4:30 in the morning.
4:30 in the afternoon, because that way you can come and you can play bingo. You can have a good time for a couple of hours. And then you still have your Saturday night to do whatever.
Go to dinner, go dance, whatever it is, right. Which I thought was an excellent idea.
Yeah. Yes. And you win cash prizes. So, you know, if you win a cash prize at bingo, you can take that money and... You know, go party with it.
Go for a bigger dinner.
Go for a bigger dinner, exactly. But it's great fun. We have just such a blast. We're really excited that that's come back. And it's a great way for people in the community to get together. And it's funny because, I mean, Lisa knows, because we have some people who just, they want to come and have fun and play some bingo. But, you know, it's a lark. But then we have some people who come, and they are serious bingo
diligent.
Players.
Diligent.
Oh.
And do not mess with them.
Oh, and don't sit at that table with them.
Yeah. If you're
don't want to talk to you.
If you're the party people, do not sit with the bingo people. Just because they're serious. Nice people, happy they're there, but...
They have come to play.
Most definitely.
Oh, gosh. And it's great fun for everyone. Yes. And I was there at the first one.
Yes.
But I was out of town on the second one for the 4th of July weekend, which was, I was very disappointed in that. But
yeah, and we had a really good crowd. Even though it was a holiday weekend, we had a very good crowd.
Yeah, we did.
Well, it was part of their holiday experience.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Gosh. So, what other activities? Now, this is, for me, that's the high point of everything.
It's
but you've
great
got
fun.
You've got the coming out on Monday nights, and you got the HIV support on Thursday nights. What else is going on?
Well, coming out is the first and third Monday of the
okay,
month.
Okay, sorry.
But the HIV support group is every Thursday.
Okay.
And we also have the senior citizen and friends. That's on every third Tuesday of the month. And
potluck, which is tomorrow
potluck
night.
Potluck dinner, mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's at Bethel Church, United Church of Christ at 1107 Shepherd, one of the open and affirming congregations.
Now, one of the things is that somebody isn't writing fast enough while we've been talking, but so there's probably a place they can go that they can find out all this information, and what is it?
There absolutely is, Jennifer. You can check our website, which is HoustonGLBTCommunityCenter.org. You can also look us up on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. Or you can call us, 713-524-3818.
All right. And we've been talking with Tim Brookover, president of the Houston GLBT Community Center, and Lisa Jackson. I want to know, you're the...
Secretary on the board of directors at the Community Center, and also the volunteer coordinator.
Coordinator of the Volunteer League. This is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
We'll get an update on the life of a trailer trash thespian after this brief meditation on the acclaimed life of a black lesbian poet.
Audre Lorde, poet, activist, and educator, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Audre Lorde was born in 1934 in Harlem. As a child, she became immersed in poetry, at times speaking in poetry. As a black lesbian, her poetry often expressed longing for justice in a world dominated by white heterosexual males. In 1968, her first book, titled The First Cities, was published. And during a six-week writer-in-residence position at Tougaloo College, she met Frances Clayton, her longtime partner. In 1971, Ms. Magazine published a lesbian love poem by Audre Lorde. After two more decades of prolific writing, she was given the Walt Whitman Citation of Merit and was appointed Poet Laureate of New York State. She often said, "I am a black lesbian feminist," and at other times said, "I cannot be categorized." Her life and legacy prove both statements true. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Reverend Robin Gorsland.
Follow your favorite international LGBT radio show on Twitter at TWO Radio. Read our blog at twopodcast.blogspot.com and check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. There are also links to all three at thiswayout.org.
Del Shores is an American film director, producer, television writer, playwright, and actor. He scripted TV shows ranging from Touched by an Angel to Queer as Folk, but he's best known for his plays like Daddy's Dying, Who's Got the Will, Sordid Lives, Southern Baptist Sissies, and The Trials and Tribulations of a Trailer Trash Housewife. His latest stage piece is Yellow, now playing to standing room only crowds in Los Angeles. When This Way Out's Steve Pride interviewed Del Shores exactly 2 years ago, Sordid Lives, the series, was poised for its debut on the U.S. LGBT cable network Logo. The show became a huge ratings hit, but was inexplicably yanked after one season.
Previously on Sordid Lives, a series.
I'm not sure that I am a homosexual.
Tammy Wynette has died.
You were my reason for living.
Mrs. Ingram, I've come to take you home.
So how was your audition?
It has nudity.
Sometimes I fantasize about killing him.
Bam, bam, bam.
I'm stuck.
I'm Del Shores, writer, director, producer, you know, jack of all trades.
I loved Sordid Lives, the series. It was like my big obsession and the only real reason to watch Logo.
Well, thank you. I stopped watching, too.
So what happened?
Well, first of all, it was a really difficult journey to get the series on the air because Logo does not have a huge budget. And so I knew that going in. I designed the show to accommodate that. I wrote all the episodes. We shot it like a movie. And we had to get some other outside financing producing partners. We got IMG that distribute us. And I mean, we're in 16 countries besides the United States and have become a cult hit over in England and Israel. So, several countries. But what happened is Logo ordered the second season and it was contingent on the other financial partners coming in. IMG was lagging a little behind in selling the show, which they had only sold it, I think, to two countries at that point, but that was okay. We were willing to wait. I mean, my God, the series came 7-8 years after the movie, so the fans were there. But Logo was running the show a lot. I mean, a lot. It's running again on Logo. And the responsibility for the residuals was Once Upon a Time Films, one of the producers, at least the first portion of the residuals. And when it got time to pay the artist, myself, and the actors, no residuals. And still, the actors have received not a dime of residuals. And I have not received any money for the writing of the show. There was a settlement and a payment plan for the Directors Guild, which the first two payments have been made. But in that, it was a lot of money. I mean, a considerable amount of money for me. And I was exclusive in television to this production company because of the series, but such bad blood happened between that because all the guilds got involved. I certainly was active in trying to get my money, and it's become very messy. So I won the arbitration with the WGA, but that was in November. Still no money. Now, in that, I want to really clarify that Logo is responsible for residuals after the first 10 airings, and they have been very honorable and have paid those residuals, but that is channeled through Once Upon a Time. And that started happening last May, and we still have not even received the Logo portion of the residuals. It was a really hard time for me because, you know, I spent 4 years on this show and worked for a fraction of what I had been used to making in television when I was on Queer as Folk and Dharma and Greg. And it was my honor and my pleasure to do it because it was my show. I was working with amazing people, Rue McClanahan, Olivia Newton-John, Caroline Ray, Leslie Jordan, Beth Grant, Ann Walker, my husband Jason Dotley, Rosemary Newell Alexander. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Just a great, amazing cast, amazing guest cast, Margaret Cho, as you saw in the pilot episode, and Carson Kressley, and just, it was just a great experience in that, in the creativity. So I wanted to continue this, and yes, I allowed it to, see, I've had therapy, you have to say, I allowed it to sour me, and I became very angry, and I still have a level of anger about the situation. However, I realized something, and this was what my husband taught me. He said, you have a fan base out there, and you have to get creative again, and these aren't the only stories you have to tell, and you always tell stories. You are a performer as well. So what we did, and it helped us tremendously financially, is I went on the road. I wrote a one-man show called Del Shore's My Sordid Lives. My Sordid Lives, like I have multiple personalities. My Sordid Life. And I played 34 cities, and the fans came, and they supported me, and they laughed, and they cried, and they were touched with my stories, and I started healing, honestly, and I started writing again, and that's when I started writing. I returned to the theater. I thought that's where I started. That's where I live and breathe the best, I think, and where most of the things that I think when I die I will be known for. The birth of Sordid Lives happened in theater. Southern Baptist Sissies, Trials and Tribulations of a Trailer Trash Housewife, and so I went back to my home, which was the theater. I always say I was raised in two places when I was a kid. The church, my dad was a Southern Baptist preacher, and the theater, because my mom was the high school drama teacher. And I wrote Yellow.
How did you get involved in the theater originally?
I was doing a tiny recurring role on Days of Our Lives. I was the bartender in Shenanigans way back in the 80s. And I had, like, you know, incredible dialogue, like, here's your drink, Roman, phone call, Calliope. And I just realized that I would like a character to play that had a beginning, middle, and end, you know. So I wrote a play for me and my friends, you know, and all my actor friends. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I guess I did, because you soak up what you observe and learn. And I'd been in the theater my entire life with my, you know, my mom started college when I started first grade, and she took me to all those rehearsals of the college plays and all those musicals. And I wrote a play called Cheatin', and I was in it, and it played 8 months, so it launched my playwriting career. And then when I was doing Cheatin', my grandfather was having progressive strokes, and my mother and my aunt were fighting over a lot of funny but serious stuff to them. Like, my aunt accused my mother of trying to mercy kill my grandfather by slipping him some of her medication, and my mother threatened to sue her for slander, and it became very humorous to the people I told the stories to in the theater, and they said, that's your next play. So I wrote Daddy's Dying, Who's Got the Will? And that was the journey. That's where I started, really, as a writer, because there was not a role for me in that story. And I, for the first time, stepped out of the acting role and became the writer. And that play ran for 22 months and gave me, you know, a movie and a deal at Warner Brothers. And it was a crazy time for me in my late 20s, just launching, you know, as a writer.
So how has it been to be back on stage?
It was at first terrifying because I was Del Shore's the writer, director, and then suddenly I'm up there, and then I realized, oh, I'm good. I'm okay, you know? The stories that I tell at my dinner table with a couple of glasses of wine and me that get laughs for 8 people are now getting laughs for hundreds of people. And I constructed the one-man show in a way that has a beginning, middle, and end, an arc, and it's really about the stories that have influenced the stories in my plays and in my film and television. So people start recognizing, oh my God, he's talking about his Uncle Humpty. And in Southern Baptist Sissies, Leslie Jordan talked about Uncle Humpty with the amputated leg. And so they started putting it all together because, you know, I really am not a writer. I'm a thief. Just steal from.
But does that help you trying out material on stage as far as going forward with writing? Did it help with Yellow?
You know what's interesting is what happened with standing up there and just me and, you know, a tiny set, not a set at all, really, a chair there, a stool, a lectern. And there was some drama because I talked about Southern Baptist Sissies, but it was a lot of comedy. And I think what happened with Yellow is the influence of what I went through personally started influencing the writing of that. I did take from some friends' lives and sort of mesh 2 stories together of reality. It's really difficult to talk about Yellow because there's spoilers in Yellow and you can't reveal them, but it is truly a dramatic play. I mean, there's a lot of Del Shore's comedy in the first act, but there is a twist in the play that turns it, and it's shocking. But there's also, you know, I was watching the play last night, and there's a young gay character in the play named Kendall. That character is raised in the play by a fundamentalist mother, played incredibly by Susan Leslie, who you saw in the series help Brother Boy escape from the mental institution. It's sort of the secondary plot that's going on in the story, and it delves into what I think a lot of the gay community has to, especially in the South with fundamentalist parents. We have to create our own family. So there's a theme in the play that family is not just blood.
What do you want people to take away from this particular play?
There's a recurring theme, I think, in my work, and it's that ultimately family is important, and acceptance and forgiveness, and it's hard. And that's not easy for me either. You know, I have a very difficult time when I feel betrayed. There's a very big theme of betrayal, and with all that went on with me in my life, I thought friends that were business partners were friends as well, and they weren't. And I felt betrayed. I felt like I gave them my baby, and they, abused the child. And so I do mourn Sordid Life as a series. I wanted it to continue. And it was Logo's biggest hit. And they had the opportunity then to buy it from this producer, and they didn't protect the child. So there's a sadness there, and I did feel betrayed. But I think ultimately, you know, you do have to get to forgiveness. And there's a line in the play that Susan Leslie has, Timothea, Sister Timothea Parker is the character, and she says, they say that true healing begins when you forgive yourself. And so, you know, working through all that, I'll get there.
This has been a conversation with writer, director, producer, activist, Del Shores. For more information on his current and future projects, check out his website at delshores.net. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Now who's a judge? Who's a saint? And who's a sinner? Lord, it's tough enough to trudge from brunch to dinner. We seek the light of truth between our white lies. We sleep away our youth. under tattletale skies. When the Lord chips us in the gene pool, we get more than Granny's green eyes. We get a mama's warmth and our daddy's cool, and that thing between our thighs. That's the start of all this trouble in our sorry little, sorry little
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Michelle Pleasant, Sherry Lund, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Reverend Robin Gorslein and Steve Pride contributed program material. Olivia Newton-John performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and by you. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. You can now also find us on iTunes. Email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Rainbow 95, Collington, Oklahoma, 2ECR, Eden, New South Wales, WPSU, University Park, Pennsylvania, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody, we're going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
XXIV is Roman for 24, and you know what they say about that. And what they say is that they will be there at the Last Concert Cafe on Saturday, July 31st, for the 24th Annual Watermelon Dance and Summer Social. This KPFT benefit features the Spare Parts Band, Leslie Newman, Jimmy Dean, Los Vertigos, Richard Cagle, Larry from Austin, Plump, The Rafters, The Hightailers, and Pot Roast, all starting at 4 o'clock. Located at 1403 Nance Street, just off the Hardy McKee exit,
Houston on I-10, the Last Concert Cafe is the ideal place for Houston's premier summertime music festival. The door fee is $15 for one, $25 for two. So bring a friend and come on out and dance a while you support your community radio station, 90.1 KPFT Houston. XXIV, 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 XXIV.
The Houston Lutheran Blind Mission, or HLBM, will hold its monthly meeting and dinner for the blind and sight impaired at 11 a.m. on Saturday, July 24th, 2010, at Memorial Lutheran Church, 5800 Westheimer Road. The HLBM will present a luncheon meal where we will recognize fellow members. It will be an afternoon of food and fellowship for families and friends. Have fun and learn about yourself at this meeting. The Lutheran Blind Mission is an organization that provides social interaction, life skills support, and Christian fellowship for the blind and sight impaired of all faiths. The driver for any blind or sight impaired person is welcome to enjoy our dinner and the evening with us. The meeting will be in the fellowship hall and will end at 1 p.m. Please call Tracy Pastrana for dinner reservations by Monday, July 19th at 713-782-6079. This is KPFT Houston.
Hello, this is KPFT's 90.1 Houston. And I'm Deloitte Parker, Executive Director of SHAPE Community Center. SHAPE, shaping history for the future. For over 33 years now, SHAPE has shaped history by actively working with issues important to all of us. The freeing of Nelson Mandela. The freeing of Clarence Brantley, death row inmate. The conviction and firing of the officers that killed Otto Delaney and Byron Gillam. Voter mobilization, anti-death penalty, police brutality cases, nutrition programs, legal clinics, cultural programs. All of these programs working to make life better for all of us today for tomorrow. For more information about SHAPE, call 713-521-0629. SHAPE Community Center, 713-521-0629. Thank you.
This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston, 90.1 FM.